All right, I'll call this meeting of the Annexation and Zoning Committee to order at, I think it's 6:17. We have present members of the committee, myself, Doug Hanum, Katie Capellini, Lindsay Stow, and Mary. Mary's here. Hi, Mary. We also have other members of council present, Brian McCann, Patrick Richardson. Who am I forgetting?
Me.
Oh, Mark Fry, to my left, our president of council. The mayor's here, law director's here, and we have a number of guests in the crowd. I thought a good way to start this meeting, and I know some of you want to address the committee, and we will try and accommodate that in our time frame. But I thought it would be appropriate to begin this by reviewing the statutory criteria for granting a special use permit. It's set forth in section 1153.05 of our Sylvania municipal ordinances, and there are four specific criteria that shall be used in considering a special use application. It's mandatory, that language is that it's mandatory for us to consider it, and so as we go forward with our deliberations tonight and in the future, we want to keep these in mind. The first criteria is that the special use is necessary or desirable for public convenience at that location. I'm also going to take the prerogative of, as chair to chair this committee to give you some of my initial thoughts on each of these criteria. And then I will give members of the committee and other members of council an opportunity to address any of those, agree, disagree, clarify, extend, whatever, in due course. And then we'll take some other comments from those in the room. So with regard to the cell tower at Northview, I think evaluating whether that is necessary or desirable for the public convenience at that location. I think the I know one of the reasons that the school board talked about wanting to do this special use permit was improved cell phone service at the school and concerns about safety at the schools. Of course, there are as a result of this effort, I've learned that there are alternatives to cell phone towers to improve cell phone service at the high school, including so-called small cell towers. They're really more boxes. They don't have to be located on the gargantuan structures of that's proposed for this cell tower. And installation of those in the vicinity of the high school and of Lord's University certainly would address that. So I don't know that this special use is necessary to address that. It may be desirable in that it might generally improve cell phone service in our Sylvania community. Although we've had some testimony on that, it's difficult to quantify. It was difficult to quantify that. We went back and looked at our meeting of May 3rd, reviewed that in its entirety, and while there's definitely, and I suffer from being a lawyer, not an engineer, but there was some definite engineer speak there that I was having trouble fully following, but I got the point that there would be an improvement in service to some extent in the throughout the community. The second criteria is that the special use is so designed, located, and proposed to be operated, that the public health, safety, and welfare will be protected. And I know under, we've heard from our law director that there are certain health effect issues that we are not entitled or not allowed under the current FCC laws to consider. But I thought it was, but I take note that it was recently ruled by the DC Circuit Court of Appeals that the FCC has ignored scientific evidence showing harm from wireless radiation and was ordered to explain why it did so. Specifically, that court ordered the commission to provide a reasoned explanation for its decision to retain its testing procedures for determining whether cell phones and other portable electronic devices comply with its guidelines, required it to address the impacts of RF radiation on children, the health implications of long-term exposure to RF radiation, the ubiquity of wireless devices and other technical developments that have occurred since the commission last updated its guidelines, and address the impacts of RF radiation on the environment. So while we can't consider this issue, apparently, as I understand the law, it's clearly not a resolved issue with respect to the FCC. Thank you to the DC Circuit Court of Appeals. I've had mixed experiences with them. So we can't consider the public health and safety. Welfare is something we can concern ourselves with. Welfare certainly includes considering a number of things, including, I just want to make some notes on this because I need notes. Where is this? Well, the point is, we can certainly consider the aesthetics. Ah, here it is. Here are my notes. So while we can't consider health concerns because of the federal preemption, we can consider aesthetics, compatibility, and property values. I'll talk about property values more. We have not heard any testimony from anyone in this that suggested that the addition of this cell tower would really enhance the aesthetics of the community. In fact, exactly the opposite seems to be uniformly the case. And I note that it, placing this tower right in the middle of the athletic facilities at Northview mean that our entire community in attending events at Wildcat Stadium and the new wonderful softball facility that they built out there on the baseball diamond are going to see that, in addition to every student every day and every teacher at Northview, not to mention the neighbors who live nearby in Sleepy Hollow. And I think that's a significant matter worth considering. The next matter is that the special use will not cause substantial injury to the value of other property in the neighborhood in which it is to be located. We've had some testimony on that, or discussion of that, in our last meeting, which was again on May 3rd. We left the May 3rd meeting with a representation from the applicant that they would be getting us some additional information, expert-based information about the impact of the tower on housing values. And it's been, we've waited 3.5 months for them to tell us that they were not going to submit anything to us, leaving us with the testimony that the cell phone tower would have an impact of up to 20% decrease in housing values for those homes in the vicinity of the tower. We have also, in the intervening weeks, received some additional documentation and some correspondence to council from Dr. Lindsay Samuelson, who did appear at our last council meeting and provided his comment on this. But her submissions, again, substantiate the adverse impact of cell phone towers on real estate values nearby. I'm not going to go over all of these, but there are a few that are worthwhile noting. A 2014 survey by the National Institute for Science, Law, and Public Policy in Washington, D.C. concluded that home buyers and renters are less interested in properties located near cell towers and antennas, as well as in properties where a cell tower or group of antennas are placed on top of or attached to a building. 94% said a nearby cell tower or group of antennas would negatively impact interest in a property or the price they would be willing to pay for it. There are a number of, there's one other one that I wanted. This from an article titled Wireless Towers and Home Values, an Alternative Evaluation Approach Using a Spatial Econometric Analysis, from the Journal of Real Estate Finance and Economics, dated May 1, 2018. For properties located within 0.72 kilometers of the closest tower, results reveal significant social welfare costs, with values declining 2.4% on average and up to 9.78% for homes within tower visibility range compared to homes outside tower visibility range. So I guess we could debate what's, oh, and here's one more. This is good. This one is from, this is from an outfit called the Environmental Health Trust. And they indicate that research indicates that over 90% of home buyers and renters are less interested in properties near cell towers and would pay less for a property in close vicinity to selling cellular antennas. Documentation of a price drop up to 20% is found in multiple surveys and published articles. So where we stand presently is we have some substantial evidence suggesting that cell phone towers do have an adverse impact and do cause injury to the value of the property. I guess at this point, we are all left with just deciding what is substantial and what is not. Then the final criteria is that the special use conforms, with the exception of plan developments, to the applicable regulations of the district in which it is to be located, including yard and height restrictions, and also conforms to the requirements for off-street parking and loading facilities. Well, the tower clearly does not comply with our height restrictions for residential properties, which is what this is zoned for. So those are the criteria and my initial takes on each of those. This isn't my hearing. This is committee hearing. So I open the floor to other committee members to comment on this application.
Mr. Hanum, thank you for that overview. I think it was really helpful to hear really what the criteria is for the special use permit. I think that you've presented some very interesting points. In particular, I'm appreciative of the information about the substantial value change that is possible as a result of this. I know that there had been some discussion at some point about alternate locations. Do you know whether there was, has been any other discussion around that topic?
I don't know what the, so far, I know we've heard about, we've heard from, at least I've heard secondhand, that Lord's is open to locating this and never rejected it, as I think was represented by the applicant. I'm not, that it just never got full consideration and they could consider it. Mr. McCann, I think you had some information about the country club?
Yes, in Highland Meadows location that the board is still possibly interested. And there is not an access issue regarding Highland Meadows. There can be access granted 7 by 24 for any maintenance or issue needs. So that location would still be in the mix if it was explored. In addition to, I wanted to make a comment regarding your assessment on booster service for, I'm involved in a project right now with Northview regarding, they went ticketless. So the service out to the football field is non-existent for Wi-Fi and stuff because more than two people use it, then it's unusable. So we're going with a point-to-point solution, and we could, as Inverness did over the weekend, have a temporary or even a permanent solution for the cell service in that area, and we're looking into that now.
And I think those, the alternative locations clearly go to the I think each of those first two criteria, the first one being, is it necessary or desirable? And the second one being that it's located to serve the public welfare. Lindsay, you have anything you want to add?
And all, I appreciate the summary. I do think that we should add to the discussion of necessary. I know that perhaps the location may not fulfill the criteria for necessary, but I would like to say overall, I do think there is a necessity to have a certain level of service within the city of Sylvania. I believe that Sylvania has set a standard and a precedent of being a technologically modern city, and that we already have a standard throughout the city of having a certain level of connectivity with yourself. And I think that this area that is underserved at the moment is an exception to the rule that has been set, and something that I think helps define schooling as being a place you want to move to. And being a place that you want to build your business right away. So I know necessary has a lot of parts as a part of it, but I think one of it is that if we can find the right spot, if we haven't already, I think we should still be pursuing being able to have this type of location. And I don't think cell phone service is getting less.
Okay. Katie, you have anything?
Doug, so I really appreciate your outlining that in such an organized way. And I feel like the one thing that was concerning for me was the safety issue at Northview. And I'm happy that you found alternatives. And I also feel really kind of excited about Highland Meadows and possibly Lord's. I felt that before they had been crossed off, but those are two locations that were in the circle. So it appears that they wouldn't be right next to residential homes. We wouldn't have the same aesthetic issues. So I mean, Lindsay, I do agree with what you said. We do have set a standard in Sylvania for technology, but I don't feel like if we eliminate the possibility of putting it at the Northview parking lot, that there are other options. We would still be able to have that bar nice and high for technology.
Other members of council?
I had a question on kind of following on what Katie said. If it was moved to one of those locations that was mentioned, I mean, does that solve the problem or does that just move it? I mean, people can see Island Meadows and Lourdes from, you know, is it just different houses or, you know, I don't know, Brian, do you know where on Island Meadows what was proposed?
On the maintenance shed.
That's in the
back? Next to the 15th hole. Back to the eighth.
Yeah. And is that more out of the view of residential properties than a proposed location?
It would be viewed, I'm not sure of the street, but the homes along that southern location.
That's what I was thinking, which I think is township, right? But still.
I'm not sure.
Either way, I just think it's kind of a densely populated area. I've got the Google Maps up. I'm trying to look at, you know, where houses are around there. And, it, you know, it's Sylvania. It's a small town. There's houses everywhere. So if we're going to go down the path of let's move it somewhere else, is it just different houses that are now going to get affected? I guess that would be my question. And I do think that Lindsay made a great point. You know, more people are working from home than ever. And the ability to make a phone call without it being dropped is very important, and I live near Northview as well, and I drop calls from my house all the time, and it's definitely an issue that needs a solution.
Mark?
From my perspective, I'm one of those people like you, Patrick, that get to drop calls all the time. And that's an annoyance and something that definitely needs to be fixed one way or another. But the safety concern is material in my mind. So to whatever extent you can clarify, Mr. McCann, in regards to the safety aspect, what's the time frame of that solution, that potential solution at Northview?
We're trying to get it implemented shortly, but that would address mostly the Wi-Fi at this point.
Okay.
We're looking at solutions for the cell.
Okay.
Okay. Members, I know that a lot of you are here. Those who want to speak in favor of the special use permit, recognize them.
Yes, Gene Abercrombie, attorney Easton Smith, the applicant's counsel. I think let's set the record straight on a number of things. Number one, we reviewed the standards at one of the multiple meetings that we've been here in front of you before, and a lot of these things that we've brought up this evening are the first time that these issues are being raised. And I would argue that from the health, safety, and welfare is being supplemented in that you are increasing the strength of that backbone of cell service that would be available in the event of an emergency. And I'm not quite clear what Mr. McCann's proposal is with respect to the Wi-Fi at the high school, but then maybe the cell. But I don't anticipate that would solve anything outside of the Northview campus. And all of you do acknowledge that there are dropped calls and that it is an issue. But then the issue turns to the appraisal values and it turns to the location. And with respect to location, I believe the record would show that when we had a Verizon RF engineer here back in May, he testified that this would be the center of the land that would provide the best supplement for coverage at any other site, including the Lourdes or including Highland, would not fully supplement the rain that has been created. So the question is just one to that. And had I known that that was going to be coming up again, I certainly brought them back with us this evening. Let me speak with respect to the appraisal information first. And this is to clarify the record. Mr. Hannon, you are correct that at the last meeting I offered to provide some additional evidence as to value because this body heard testimony from a resident who was quoting their realtor who was undefined, who was not here, not able to be cross-examined or questioned with respect to anything. So it's purely conjecture that there could be an effect on value. So we offered to do that as part of the next meeting. And I will acknowledge that there was a misunderstanding as far as we were under the assumption that it would be placed on the council agenda for the next meeting and that we would be presenting evidence at that point in time. Nonetheless, on July 21st, I communicated to the law director via an email that we would not be providing the Martin Wood appraisal information. They had a conflict of interest and were unable to undertake the representation and we were not able to locate anyone else here locally with the requisite qualifications. So we are sitting here today, September 7th, after having requested a hearing on the next available date back to July 21st. So this is not a situation in need of still holding this. With respect to the valuation, though, since we are going to go to what I would consider to be extraneous evidence, I would like to submit a copy of a report that Mr. Carr, our client's consultant, used in a number of cases, I believe specifically in Indiana, that analyzes and determines that there is no effect on value. And I would also like to submit a short article prepared by Belbridge Property Advisors. Belbridge is one of the largest appraisal companies in the country. And the article is entitled, How Does the Proximity of Cell Tower Impact Home Values? And what they did, and this is a study dated 2018, and what they did is they looked at the Boston, the Dallas, the Phoenix, and the Raleigh markets. And what they determined was, based upon a certain search radius, they looked for pairings of homes with higher sale prices and lower sale prices. And basically what they concluded, I'll quote, and this is with respect to Boston, quote, the data indicates cell towers do not have a negative impact on property values. Dallas, again, quote, the data indicates cell towers do not have a negative impact on property values. Phoenix, quote, four of the five sub-areas studied have no measurable difference. In one some area had a nominal difference. Further, with respect to Raleigh, quote, overall, the average and median prices increased in four of the five sub-area, and one sub-area indicated no measurable difference. The data indicates cell towers do not have a negative impact on property values within the radius of cell towers. And one thing that I will acknowledge is, the internet is full of a lot of information. If you want to go looking, you're going to find information on both sides of the equation, depending on what agenda the particular author has. And a lot of materials out there are clearly written by opponents of cell towers and extrapolating certain instances into broad implications. And I believe that the Belbridge article, what we have, stands as solid evidence and probably the best evidence with respect to valuation. There is no effect, and who shall I submit this to?
Me. I'll make sure this gets distributed to everybody.
Thank you. As far as the location, I believe we touched upon this. Again, the ARC engineer has noted that this is the optimal location. We played a little bit of whack-a-mole here throughout a number of hearings. First, the issue was advanced by Dr. Stowe, the negative impacts of the RF radiation. And as Mr. Hannon has acknowledged, that the locality does not have the ability to regulate our current FCC regulations. And the only other issue that I would like to touch upon, and then I had a short conversation with the law director in late August, and submitted correspondence to her, which she does have, regarding the concept of the Federal Communications Shot Clock. And the Federal Communications Commission issued a declaratory rule in 2009, putting a time limit upon which municipalities and other government authorities had, in order to rule on an application. The experience at the time was that a lot of local governments were slow rolling these applications. And pursuant to that, the FCC found that a reasonable period of time under 47 U.S.C. Section 332(c)(7)(b)(2). And again, this is in my letter, but I'll just paraphrase, that if a local government fails to act within the appropriate time period, the applicant is entitled to bring an action in federal court seeking the issuance of the permit. And we conclude, regarding the support, following time frames. One is 90 days for the review of a co-location application, which is completely not. Second is 150 days view of the siting application other than co-locations. We are clearly beyond 150 days as we sit here, and we believe that it is our entitlement to the permit. The application is complete. The city had the ability within the first 30 days after receiving to ask for additional information, which was not done. And we hope that the council does approve the application, but Verizon has indicated to us that the application is not granted, that they will start our clients to receive the federal court. Thank you.
Okay.
I do have a question. Again, I'm not an attorney, so I don't understand all the details, but did I misunderstand that you did not provide the information we requested at our May meeting? And we weren't notified until July 31st that you were not going to provide it. So I do think we were holding for that. And maybe I mixed up, and you could correct me.
At the May meeting, there was some discussion with respect to evaluation by a resident. At that point, we volunteered to provide information for council's consideration. And again, council would have had the ability to require that information up front. It didn't do so. We volunteered the information. We're not indicating that we don't have anyone locally provide that for us. And basically what you're talking about is whether that time period was told during that. And I'm not the council, obviously, but it's my position that it was a voluntary offer of information. And I haven't counted the exact days, but I think even if you take that into consideration, we may very well be able to honor 50 days.
I'm not sure about that, but I do think that I appreciate your explanation, and I'm sure there'll be varying views and opinions about that.
Well, at the end of the day, good work will make that determination. Okay. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry, Brian? Let me just make... Mary, in response to your question, I went back and I looked at the May 3rd meeting, and the offer, it wasn't a request, it was an offer to provide us this information from Mr. Wood, and I made it very clear that we look forward to receiving that, and I've made very clear on a number of occasions that we were not moving forward. We're waiting receipt of that report. Clearly the case. And, you know, I mean, if he believes he's beyond the shot clock, he can file tomorrow. So, and that would certainly make our job a little easier, maybe. But anyway, Brian?
My question to you is, are we being threatened that you're gonna, we're gonna be superseded by a federal court to not be able to make this decision? So it will be out of our hands if it goes to federal court? Is that what he's saying to us?
I don't know if it's a threat. I think that's what, I think that's the upshot of what's being suggested here, yeah.
Can you clarify that?
Well, I don't need clarification on that.
I do.
I'm not making threats. I don't make threats. I'm just stating what the law provides for the city, the remedy that my client would pursue. And with respect to your initial question of whether the court would supersede, if council approves the application, we obviously would, the issue would be moved and we would have no reason to go to court.
And if we did not?
If you did not, then it would be the intention to file suit with the federal court.
Okay, and I'll just address it. Thank you, Mr. Abercrombie. You can sit down. If we decide on this, I think it takes it out of the hands of the federal court. We're back into state court, and we've had experience defending actions in state court. So the issue is, if we don't act, that's when the shot clock comes into effect, not if we do act. I don't think he has jurisdiction under this FCC guidance to go to federal court if we do act. But you know what? They're going to do what they're going to do. And if they go to federal court, we have insurance and good lawyers, and we'll make that argument and we'll see where we go. I don't think that issue is relevant to our decision about this special use permit. And the issue with regard to this special use permit is, does it meet the criteria established in the ordinance that warrants it being approved? And,
And Mr. Hanum, could I?
Yes.
Also suggest that I appreciate Mr. Abercrombie sharing that information. Appreciate this discussion, but I don't want to lose sight that we have community citizens here with us to share their perspective, and I think that's very valuable. There's a step here that we're not going to resolve tonight. We'll have to watch how it plays out, but the most important thing right now, I think, is that we hear from our community.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Are there any other proponents who wish to address council? If not, is there anyone opposed to the special use permit that would like to address council? Okay. Well, I think we've had a good meeting. I think that let's talk next about our next steps. I have talked generally with the law director that I think that we should strive to make a prompt decision at this point on this special use application. I think I'm not sure. I think what we will do is we will prepare legislation in accordance with the Planning Commission recommendation and other factors, and we'll bring that to we clearly want to have this ordinance in writing so that we have clearly set out before us what we're doing, and we can have an up and down vote on it at our next council meeting. Is there anybody who wants to do something different than that at this point?
One more question.
Yeah, Lindsay.
You had mentioned that the Northview campus was at the center and the best spot to have a tower. And you mentioned that if it were to be relocated to Highland or Lords, that it wouldn't work as well. Would it not work as well to the point of needing a second tower or needing a tower at both locations? I'm not sure where this is there some sort of change that would occur in the location of the change?
I don't specifically remember the testimony from the I don't want to. Yes. Good evening, Steve Carr, 2894 Alden Drive, Greenwood, Indiana, 46143. The purpose of having that ARC engineer at the previous hearing was to explain why we decided this proposed location. There was some specific discussion that if we moved it over to the golf course area, it would push it too far towards that direction, thus creating a hole in another area, the downtown area. This service and offloads, if you all remember what he communicated to you guys, and you saw it on the screen, where there's four locations, we're going to the center. We are also offloading the traffic of other areas that aren't in this downtown area, that this new facility will improve coverage for those areas as well. It was the purpose of that ARC engineer to state that on record, so that from his perspective, you guys aren't ARC engineers. He's been in the business, I think it was for 25 years. That was the point of his professional opinion to be before this morning, to communicate the need and why we're not going here, why we're not going there, and that this location that we have before you, that we have before you in May, was the optimal location to meet our coverage objective to provide adequate, reliable service to this area. Thank you.
Yes.
Hi everybody, Lindsay Sanderson, 1542 North Lincoln. I just wanted to clarify, I thought that Lord and Highland Meadows were out of control because both properties denied access. So can you please clarify that for me?
There was testimony previously that neither Lord's or Highland Meadows, despite repeated requests, showed any interest at that time in cooperating or granting a lease for the tower. To the extent that there is now some interest, that is a change back, but at the time we were here previously. Steve, is that accurate? Is the one that was negotiated with?
We had several, Steve Carr, 2894 Alden Gate Drive, Greenwood, Indiana, or 6143. We did have conversations with the golf course folks. I sat before the board, showed them the location. They presented a location that was in excess of maybe a mile back to the course. There were some discussions amongst their board that they couldn't make a decision as to wanting to move forward with this. The area with which they would offer to us created much limitation for our ability to meet co-location opportunities, meaning they wanted to put us in a small little corner, and if you know the topography around that area, it drops off a great deal. They did not want to interfere with any of the views of the holes on the golf course. So there was a lot of back and forth discussions, and ultimately we could not come to terms on that location and allowing them to give us the amount of property we need to fully provide a site that will not only accommodate Verizon, but future carriers as well. That's part of the things that you do when you build a facility in today's world. You build it to provide co-location opportunities so that the other carriers will be able to utilize it. The location that they provided to us was such that it limited the amount of ground space and did not adequately provide what we needed in order to meet the demands of their requests to proceed forward. And Lord's, we had communications with them. They said they were not interested in proceeding forward. That was back in 2011. That's how old this surgery is. That's how long we've been trying to find a solution to this area to provide improved service. And that's the fact. Thank you.
Mr. Hanum, I think that your suggestion is a good one. I appreciate that you took into consideration the recommendation of the Municipal Planning Commission, and I think it does allow us to move forward with legislation and then make a decision based on an up-down vote at the appropriate time in the next meeting.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the Annexation and Zoning Committee.
So moved.
Katie. All in favor? Aye. Thank you. We stand adjourned at 7:02.